Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Targeted Talks. I'm your host, Jordan Sava. In this episode, we're joined by Virginia Kaklamani of UT Health for a deep dive into the Emerald Study. Thank you so much for joining us. To start, would you introduce yourself to our audience?
Right now.
Virginia Kaklamani, medical oncologist at UT Health, professor of medicine, and director of the breast oncology program.
Perfect. Thank you so much for joining us. So I guess to start, would you mind just providing an overview of the Emerald trial and its importance in the treatment of ER-positive, HER2-negative metastatic breast cancer?
Absolutely. So the Emerald trial was a trial looking at elacestrant, which is an oral SERD, comparing that to standard of care endocrine therapy, which was either fulvestrant or an aromatase inhibitor, in women with metastatic hormone-positive, HER2-negative breast cancer. Patients on the Emerald trial had all received a prior CDK4/6 inhibitor in the metastatic setting and could have received one line of chemotherapy. There were two primary endpoints. The first one was progression-free survival in the whole patient population, and the other one was progression-free survival in patients that had tumors with ESR1 mutations. What the primary results showed was that there was an improvement that was statistically significant in progression-free survival, both in the overall and in the mutated patient population. But that improvement was mostly because of the benefit in the patients that had tumors with ESR1 mutations. Subsequent analyses showed that patients that received most of the benefit were patients that had a prior duration of CDK4/6 inhibitor of more than 12 months. And then there were some subset analyses that were done suggesting that elacestrant is active regardless of whether patients had visceral or bone disease, regardless of whether patients had other mutations as well.
Perfect. Thank you so much for that. And the trial highlights elacestrant as a better alternative to standard of care endocrine therapies. What about elacestrant makes it more effective, particularly for patients with ESR1 mutations?
So ESR1 mutations are mutations that occur in the ligand binding domain of the estrogen receptor, and they make the receptor constitutively active. That means that it doesn't need a ligand to be activated. It doesn't need estrogen to be activated. And so patients that have tumors with ESR1 mutations tend to have resistant disease to aromatase inhibitors and tamoxifen. Elacestrant, because of its mechanism of action of being a selective estrogen receptor downregulator, it can work in tumors that have ESR1 mutations, and therefore its benefit is mostly in those tumors that other endocrine therapies are really ineffective in. Probably one of the reasons is the fact that we can use a higher dose of elacestrant, and therefore we can destroy the estrogen receptor or degrade it much more effectively than we would with other treatments such as fulvestrant.
Perfect, makes sense. And the trial focused on patients who had undergone prior CDK4/6 inhibitor treatment. Why was that usage such an important part of criteria for the Emerald study?
So when looking at how we treat patients with metastatic HR-positive breast cancer, the first line therapy in most settings is going to be combination endocrine therapy with a CDK4/6 inhibitor. The reason for that is the efficacy, the overall survival that has been shown to be superior in patients that receive this treatment as first line as well. So what we wanted to design was a trial that was a real world trial where we saw patients that get treated the way they get treated with most of our colleagues. And that's why we wanted patients to have received a prior CDK4/6 inhibitor. We also had data from the phase 1 trial showing efficacy of elacestrant in patients that had been pretreated with a CDK4/6 inhibitor.
Wonderful. And the trial and data published in the American Association for Cancer Research reported significant improvements in PFS, especially in those patients with the ESR1 mutations. Can you explain those findings further and the significance for this particular subset of patients?
Yeah, so what we found was that in patients that had tumors with ESR1 mutations, there was an improvement in progression-free survival with elacestrant compared to standard of care endocrine therapy. The median PFS in the elacestrant arm was 3.8 months versus the standard of care endocrine therapy, which was around 1.9 months. This was statistically significant. Now, neither of the two arms did extremely well in this trial, but this trial ha included a pretty diverse subset of patients that also may have received chemotherapy. 30% of the patients had received chemotherapy before. Patients who could have received more than one endocrine therapies. So then when we teased out the patients that still had endocrine sensitive disease, and the way we did that was looking at prior duration of a CDK4/6 inhibitor, that's where we saw the clinically meaningful benefit of elacestrant, where in patients that had previously received the CDK4/6 inhibitor for at least 12 months, elacestrant had produced a median progression-free survival of 8.6 months compared to 1.9 months with standard of care endocrine therapy.
Wonderful. Thank you for delving into that. And how do mutational variants or HER2 low expression influence treatment outcomes? And how did elacestrant perform across these subgroups in the trial?
So we also looked at several other subgroups. We looked at patients that had bone-only disease or liver and lung metastases, and regardless of where the metastatic disease was, they still had a benefit from elacestrant. We looked at patients that had HER2 low versus HER2 zero breast cancer, and all of those patients received a very similar benefit from elacestrant. We looked at patients that had tumors with a PIK3CA and an ESR1 mutation, and those patients also benefited from elacestrant. Same thing with patients that had a P53 and an ESR1 mutation as well. So it seemed that regardless of the whatever subset we looked at, there still was a clinically meaningful benefit of elacestrant compared to standard of care endocrine therapy in the patients, again, that had these endocrine sensitive tumors defined by the duration of a prior CDK4/6 inhibitor of at least 12 months, as well as the patients that had tumors with ESR1 mutations.
That's great. And what did the Emerald trial reveal about its safety in patients with these liver and lung metastases?
So, safety of elacestrant was what we had seen in the overall patient population. It's a relatively easy drug to give. It can cause some GI toxicity, some nausea, some GI upset. But the use of antiemetics in Emerald was actually pretty low. Only 8% of patients on Emerald that were randomized to elacestrant received an antiemetic, compared to 10% in the patients receiving an aromatase inhibitor. There weren't any other worrisome toxicities, such as ocular or cardiac toxicities. And these are toxicities that have been seen with other oral SERDs, but with elacestrant, there weren't any cases of that.
Wonderful, thank you. And do you think the duration of prior CDK4/6 inhibitors could become a key factor in deciding future treatment approaches?
I think it can. It really has to do with our clinical sense of whether the tumor is still endocrine sensitive or not. We as physicians see these patients, we see how they've gone through different therapies, how long the different therapies have lasted for, and we typically have a sense of whether this tumor is still endocrine sensitive or not. On clinical trials, we have to define this a little bit better, and so the duration of a prior CDK4/6 inhibitor was an easier way to define it, especially since we had that data.
Perfect. And could you elaborate on the importance of ESR1 mutations as a biomarker for endocrine sensitivity and how this impacts future therapies for this space?
So the role of ESR1 mutations is very important in how the tumor progresses on endocrine therapy. ESR1 mutations develop over time. These are not the mutations that are present in the primary tumor, but these are mutations that occur while a tumor progresses on endocrine therapy. So in the primary tumor, less than 1% of tumors will have an ESR1 mutation. At the time of initial metastatic disease presentation, around 5% will have an ESR1 mutation. But then in that second and third line therapy, that the rate of these mutations increases to 30, 40, sometimes even 50%. So these mutations build over time, and they're subclonal mutations. These mutations make the tumors endocrine resistant, especially when we talk about tamoxifen, aromatase inhibitors, and fulvestrant at some degree. So tumors that have ESR1 mutations tend to have shorter progression-free survivals compared to tumors that do not have these ESR1 mutations.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for that. And for patients who previously received combination therapies, how does single agent elacestrant compare in terms of the efficacy and patient convenience?
So combination therapies tend to be hard, both as far as side effects, as far and as far as cost, convenience, and so forth. Elacestrant is a single agent endocrine therapy, so when we look at the toxicity profile, it is favorable compared to any of the combination therapy options. So when we have to make a decision as to whether to give elacestrant or whether to give combination therapy, one of the things to take into account is the safety profile and the difference between those two options.
Got it. And since ESR1 mutations are often acquired during treatment, how important is it to incorporate liquid biopsy testing into clinical practice?
So liquid biopsies are extremely important because these are subclonal mutations. If we do a tissue biopsy, we may miss an ESR1 mutation. Whereas with a liquid biopsy, because there's shedding of the tumor of all metastatic sites, we would expect to find an ESR1 mutation if any of the tumors have developed that ESR1 mutation. So it's extremely important that if we're looking for an ESR1 mutation, that we do a liquid, not a tissue biopsy, and also that we do serial testing. So if a patient still is eligible for endocrine therapy and we didn't find an ESR1 mutation previously, we may be able to find it this time or the next time. And so I typically will continue doing serial testing at the time of disease progression to see if a patient is eligible for elacestrant.
Wonderful. And jumping right off that, how does this influence treatment decisions, especially in trials like Emerald?
So this makes a big difference in treatment decisions. If a tumor has an ESR1 mutation, we know that elacestrant is an active medicine. Now there's trials going on where we're combining it with other targeted therapies. So it'll be extremely interesting to see safety as well as efficacy data from those trials. But ultimately, if a tumor is ESR1 mutated, one of the preferred therapies is going to be elacestrant.
Perfect. And moving forward, how do you see findings from the Emerald trial influencing future breast cancer treatment paradigms, particularly for those with endocrine-resistant metastatic breast cancer?
We're still struggling with what to do with patients that have endocrine-resistant disease. This is one of the holy grails of breast medical oncology. But elacestrant is one of the treatment options. There's a lot of other ones. We know that the mechanism of endocrine resistance is very complicated. It includes upregulation of other pathways such as EGFR and HER2. It includes epithelial mesenchymal transition. It includes immune marker upregulation. So to say that elacestrant is going to be the only drug that we're going to use for endocrine resistance is pretty naive. But what is becoming very obvious is the fact that elacestrant is one of the medicines that will be active in one of the types of endocrine resistance, and that is the type that is associated with ESR1 mutations.
A really great answer, as were all of the insights you gave. So that is everything I actually have, but is there anything I missed or anything that you think is important to add?
So the only thing that I didn't add is the fact that we also looked at specific mutations on ESR1, and we looked at the two most common mutations and then looked at the efficacy of elacestrant in either of them. And it was very similar to the whole subgroup. So it doesn't look like there's some mutations where elacestrant would perform better or worse. Regardless of what ESR1 mutation a patient's tumor has, elacestrant is an active drug.